Hello, folks. This is Will Aitchison, and I'm happy to present another in our series of LRIS podcast interviews. Today, we're going to be speaking to Greg Wiley. Greg is a Minnesota management side attorney. He's in practice outside of Minneapolis right now. Greg has an extensive history of litigating cases both in federal and state court. He used to be in one of those huge management side firms that you see around the country. His was Littler Mendelson. I had the good fortune about a year and a half ago to work with Greg on presenting a training program for management side labor reps in Minnesota. It was a very fun event, and I thought a very good training program. What I wanted to talk to Greg about today is a recent case from the Minnesota Supreme Court in which he's been involved, and it's a fascinating case about whether employees have some sort of appeal rights for personnel evaluations, performance evaluations. Normally, you'd think the answer to that question is no, they don't, particularly under most labor contracts. And what we want to hear from Greg is why the Minnesota Supreme Court thinks under a Minnesota statute that answer may actually be yes, there is a right to appeal performance evaluations. So, Greg, with that, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Will. Thank you, and I appreciate the introduction. We did have a chance to talk a little bit about this case when you were out here in Minnesota, and what really struck me is how surprised you looked when we started talking about the Minnesota Data Practices Act.
So, hey, yeah, let's start with that, Greg. Tell us what this is, the statute that's involved in the case, the Data Practices Act. What's it all about?
Well, it's similar in some respects to a federal law called the Privacy Act that deals with Freedom of Information Act requests for federal jurisdiction. But here in Minnesota, it's kind of like that, but on steroids, I'd say. The presumption under the statute, and it's Minnesota Statute Chapter 13, I did kind of pull it up. It's well over 100 pages long if you pull it up on the internet and PDF it. So it's fairly comprehensive statute, and it gives people a lot of guidance and, frankly, a lot of headaches on what is public and private information. And how it started was it was really kind of trying to strike a balance between the public's right to know about data that's being maintained by the government and the privacy rights of citizens. And so that's the conflict the statute is trying to resolve. It is often amended. Every year there are some changes to it. Some changes are more important than others, but a lot of times it gets labor professionals like me and other HR folks and labor folks that work for public entities really up in arms about some changes to the statute.
Well, Greg, let's talk about one feature to this statute. Let's say I'm a Minnesota citizen and the government is collecting data on me. And I know we'll come back to what that means, data. But let's say government has data on me. Does this statute give me the right to challenge the accuracy or the completeness of that data?
Yes, it does. I mean, part of the statute, and that really ends up being the main issue in the case we're going to talk about, is 1304 is a subdivision of that statute, and subdivision 4 of that gives, and this applies to any citizen in the state who feels that there's data being maintained by them and by the government. They have the right to come forward to a designated, what the statute calls, a responsible authority from that public entity and challenge whether that data is, one, accurate, or two, complete. And the responsible authority, it has to be a written challenge that the citizen, or as we'll talk about, an employee can make. And then the responsible authority has 30 days to respond to that. And there's really only two answers the responsible authority can give. One is to make corrections and say, okay, at least part of what you're saying was correct and we should make it more accurate. Or two, to say, no, the manner in which we have created the data and maintained the data is accurate and complete, and we're going to deny your challenge to it.
So let's say I've lodged this challenge. Let's say something as innocuous as I think you have my address wrong,
yes,
in your particular database, and you, the governmental body, tell me, nope, we've got it right. Then what?
Then that citizen has the right to appeal to a special department that's created by statute, the Minnesota Department of Administration. And underneath that, there's something called the Information Policy Analysis Division. So they deal with a lot of data practices issues. They have a number of employees who their full-time job is to try and answer these questions and resolve these issues. But really, the commissioner is in charge of dealing with these sorts of challenges we're discussing today. And that commissioner really has the right to process these claims. What the commissioner did in the case is a little bit unusual, but what the statute does is it defers that challenge to the Minnesota Administrative Procedures Act, which is basically just a very short form type of trial experience like you might see in an arbitration. It gives someone the right to present their challenge in front of an administrative law judge, to present evidence, to present witnesses, and it really gives them essentially the right to have a contested case hearing, and that ALJ would then decide whether that data needs to be changed or not.
And then there would be appeal routes that would eventually take you into court from the ALJ's decision, correct?
That's correct. And that's not actually what happened in the case we'll talk about, but you have the right to then take it to court if the ALJ, you feel the ALJ had it wrong.
Now let's talk about Todd Schwanke. Did I pronounce that right?
It's Schwanke, that's correct.
Schwanke. Let's talk about him and where he works and what he wanted.
Sure. Sergeant Schwanke worked in a county here in Minnesota, Steele County. He was a sergeant. He reported to the chief deputy of his respective county. And their evaluation, performance evaluation process, and that is the crux of this case, had 23 different rubrics, I guess you could call them. And he challenged, through a letter to the responsible authority, the completeness and accuracy of his performance evaluation, saying some of the 23 rubrics that he was graded on, met expectations, exceeds expectations, did not meet expectations, he felt some of those were wrong. And so he challenged that with a very detailed letter to the responsible authority saying, I feel this needs to be reviewed. The responsible authority who, in this particular case, ended up being the sheriff of Steele County, said, we feel that your performance evaluation is accurate. So he denied the challenge from the responsible authority level. This individual, Sergeant Schwanke, tried to take it then to that administrative law judge process we talked about. And the first step for that is to make an appeal to the Department of Administration. So what the Department of Administration did, and what I said is I thought it's a little bit unusual, is they summarily disposed of the case without bringing it to the ALJ. And the reason for their decision was they felt that a personnel decision like that, personnel review, is not what 1304 of the statute was designed to present a forum for challenge. In other words, that's outside of the sort of challenge that was contemplated by the statute.
And so, in essence, the holding is, look, performance evaluations aren't the sort of things that can be appealed through the Data Practices Act. Is that right?
That's correct. That's what the Department of Administration tried to say. And then Schwanke, Sergeant Schwanke, did bring it to court saying the Department of Administration is wrong. This is clearly public data. And so the Court of Appeals in Minnesota took up the case. And so they did review, and you bring up a good point, what is data? They go through the statute, and they actually use basically dictionary definitions to determine what is public data. And there's a separate part of the Data Practices Act that deals with personnel data maintained by public entities about their employees. That's 1343 of the statute. And now that part of the statute actually reverses the presumption a little bit. And I'm not sure how important it is to the case, but instead of all data about employees being presumed to be public, it reverses the presumption and it makes it all data about employees that are public employees is presumed to be private data. And then it delineates areas within that that are always public as well. So it's kind of an exception within the exception and then enumerates exceptions to that. But it gets to be fairly difficult to apply the statute at times, as you might imagine.
And this dispute actually ends up in the Minnesota Supreme Court, right?
Yes, it does. And so what happened was the Court of Appeals kind of went through a statutory interpretation exercise. And the Court of Appeals said, look, first off, Department of Administration, you don't have the right to just summarily dispose of this case without sending it to an ALJ. Your procedures require this to be a contested case hearing, so long as the sergeant had followed all the procedures, which he had. And so they said, you can't just boot this case. But I think kind of the more interesting part of the case for the practitioners is it said, well, you can. This is the sort of challenge that is contemplated by 1304. We're talking about personnel data that is maintained by the government, and that's information that can be challenged, but there are some limitations to it. So, but the Court of Appeals said, okay, first off, Department of Administration, you should have sent this to an ALJ, and an ALJ should evaluate it. Second off is, yes, Sergeant Swanky can use this statute to challenge his personnel review, which is very interesting, I think. And so then it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ended up affirming the Court of Appeals and saying this sort of challenge is permissible, but it does have some pretty significant and important limitations on what sort of material can be reviewed.
And limitations in the context of a performance evaluation, right?
Exactly right.
And what does the court say can be challenged and what is not the sort of thing that can be challenged?
Well, strictly subjective opinions by a supervisor, for instance, the exceeds expectations or meets expectations, that cannot be challenged if it's strictly subjective. But what the court went on to say was, and this is the important part that I think they were really trying to get out there, was if there's a factual basis to that subjective interpretation that is wrong, in other words, and I'll give you an example here, in other words, the basis for the subjective opinion is incorrect, that can be challenged. And the Minnesota Supreme Court went through an example, and this is, I don't know how good this example is, but if someone, for instance, in Swanky's case, he said he was asked to develop a sergeant FTO training program. That's what the employer said, that he was asked to do that sort of work. He said he was never asked to do it. So the Supreme Court went through an exercise and said, well, that's objectively verifiable. And the word they use, I think, an interesting word, is actually falsifiable material within that performance review. So he has a right to challenge whether he was asked to do that or not, which that fact informed whether he had, quote-unquote, met expectations under the rubric of this performance evaluation.
Well, I mean, we've all seen tons of performance evaluations, and they have grading scales and check boxes and everything like that, but they're also fairly littered with observations about what the employee did or didn't do or how often they did it or didn't do it. It seems to me that the court's opinion here opens up those broader sorts of performance evaluations to challenge pretty significantly.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it does, and I think that's what really got practitioners here worried. I mean, this is, as you can imagine, well, a fairly expensive process to have to probably retain an attorney to defend a performance evaluation every time it came up. What we've seen, however, is the impact, at least so far, has not been as extreme as we had thought. And some of that goes to how this process is supposed to work. It's supposed to, let's say it goes to the Department of Administration. There's a particular part of the commissioner's job. The commissioner is supposed to essentially resolve the dispute to the extent he can before it gets to the ALJ. And the commissioner, that means the language in the statute is pretty interesting, but essentially try and get the parties to agree on what information should be public and what included in the performance evaluation as accurate or not. And so there's supposed to be this whole process before it even gets to a contested case hearing that hadn't happened in this case. And I believe one of the reasons we haven't seen a lot of cases come out of this or challenges come out of this is there's only been a few even that have gone to that level, because now there's just kind of a shift in the balance. Employees have leverage when they go to their responsible authority saying, okay, let's correct this. I don't feel that's appropriate. Now every employer in Minnesota who's a public entity knows, okay, I have to pay attention to this employee's concerns, whereas before you might have been somewhat dismissive of them. You can't be dismissive anymore. You have to at least take a very close look and make sure that that is accurate information.
I'd like to talk hypothetically about something. Unions, of course, have a duty of fair representation to their members, but the duty of fair representation is only a very particular type of duty. It only relates to matters that arise out of the collective bargaining process. If memory serves me correctly, you have a pretty significant case in Minnesota involving the Minneapolis Police Federation on precisely that, whether there's a duty of fair representation in a pre-disciplinary or Loudermill hearing. And the general rule is that if there is no right by the union to be the exclusive representative in a particular forum, there is no duty of fair representation. And I'm wondering for your thoughts as to whether, given that construct of the duty of fair representation, unions would actually have a duty to consider appealing the accuracy of data in performance evaluations under the Schwanke decision.
Well, I have one man's opinion on this, and there might be some disputes on that. But I would say no. And frankly, I don't think unions are going to want to, simply because, you know, just as the Department of Administration argued, they're not really equipped to take these sorts of challenges on. They don't have the staff for it. They don't have the time for it. They kind of went through the parade of horribles about what could happen if every employee did this. Well, unions really are not equipped to take on these sorts of challenges for the most part. Now, you made a good point. Most collective bargaining agreements don't have the right to challenge personnel reviews, but I am familiar with some clients of mine that have that in their collective bargaining agreement. And sometimes it goes all the way through mediation. Sometimes there's some other form in which it can be challenged. And if an employee were to have that right, and first off, the union would have the right to, they'd have to represent them in that process. And frankly, it's more advantageous for them to do so because the presumptions are different. When you go in front of the Department of Administration and contested case hearing before an ALJ, it's really the employee saying this information's wrong and they have to prove that it's wrong or incomplete. With the just cause standard that you see in collective bargaining agreements, the presumption is different.
I do see one place where there could be a parade of horrors, and that is if you have one of those management labor relationships that totally falls apart.
Yes.
And then you might see scores of individual employees challenging performance evaluations through this system. And that makes me wonder, is there any effort on the part of either management or labor lobbying groups in Minnesota to get a legislative fix for the Supreme Court's decision?
Well, there has been a lot of talk about it. There hasn't been a real champion for change. And I, I think what happened with respect to that, and I'm speculating somewhat here, Will, is that most folks thought the Department of Administration would kind of take up that mantle because they simply don't have the staff to deal with a situation like you just described. So far, that hasn't happened. So, you know, I know that some of the lobbying groups, for instance, the Minnesota County's lobbying group, they have presented information to in their lobbying efforts saying this could be a situation that's just overwhelming for management of public employees. And frankly, I thought some of the union folks might support that because they're not equipped for that either. But as of yet, it's really kind of a solution waiting for a problem because there hasn't been that parade as of yet. It's been mostly dealt with from a personnel level, meaning, okay, and unions have more leverage because they have this forum out there that this can be challenged. The employees have that leverage. They bring it forward. There's discussions made. You know, maybe there are adjustments being made to performance evaluation as a result, and that's really how it's designed to work. I feel, frankly, though, the real potential for the parade of horribles is you've got a situation here. It's not just the accuracy of information. It's the completeness of information. And when you have an employee that really doesn't see eye to eye with the supervisor about what are the most important parts of their job, they could easily say, well, you're not really giving enough weight to this sort of work that I'm doing. So therefore, you're incomplete in your evaluation under that particular rubric. And I think that it's just wide open as far as what a completeness challenge could be in the performance evaluation process. That has me the most concerned about it. But my concern is somewhat tempered because as of yet, it just hasn't been the problem we anticipated. That doesn't mean that as people become more and more familiar with this law, you know, not, of course, now there's continuing legal education seminars being presented on it. At state. Sometimes the decision came down in August of last year. Sometimes it takes a little while for union representation employee groups to really understand the import of these decisions. The parade still may come. It just hasn't yet. And if the parade comes, my guess is it'll probably jump up a little further on the legislative agenda than it's been right now.
Well, Greg, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about this. It's a fascinating issue, and there are statutes out there around the country like the Data Practices Act. Not many, I'll grant you that.
Right.
I think it's easy to predict there will be more of those types of statutes in the future as government data becomes much more comprehensive or intrusive, depending upon your point of view. And we will definitely keep an eye peeled for what's going on in Minnesota. So thank you again for participating.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Will.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.